Jeez, Elliot.
I just wanted to see what's
Elliot, there's nothing quite like news breaking literally seconds before we begin the podcast, but here it is. Garnet Hathaway, the Washington Capitals, suspended 3 games for a spitting incident, a headline I never thought that I would read coming from the NHL, but there it is.
You could tell at the general manager's meeting on Tuesday that something big was coming for this. By the way that Brian McClellan answered questions, by the way that the NHL, I believe it was Colin Campbell, yes, it was Colin Campbell, was answering questions. And this is not a George Parros Department of Player Safety thing. This falls under Colin Campbell's purvey. And you could tell that both the Capitals were bracing for something and the NHL was coming for something. They did not want this to gain any traction in terms of anyone thinking it was going to be okay.
This is new territory for the NHL, and I'm very much of the mind that this is a one-off, and I don't think we'll see something like this again anytime soon in the league. I do wonder, though, considering this is new territory, are we looking at an appeal?
Well, I've sent a note. I'm waiting for an answer for that question. I mean, the bottom line is if you think you can win it, that's the only way the Players Association will appeal it. I mean, if the player wants...
Where does 3 games come from?
You know, this is new territory. That's the one thing that Colin Campbell said on Tuesday, is that there really isn't any history of this. The one thing I could really see the Capitals and or Hathaway arguing is, what's the difference between Hathaway's spitting and Brad Marchand's licking? And why did that not result in anything? I do wonder if that is going to become part of the conversation in all of this. I was hearing that quietly.
Are we really going to have a conversation about one involves a tongue and one involves bodily fluids?
They're
is that
both
where our
disgusting.
Podcast is heading today?
They're both disgusting.
This is a weird one. I can't recall. So
I know, I'll tell you this. I know people who wanted more.
More than 3?
Yes.
Based on what?
They think it's disgusting.
Well, it is. It's gross. Mm-hmm. But then someone maintains, so is a sucker punch.
Yeah,
so is a low bridge. So is,
you know, I think
a slew foot.
Yes, of course, all of that is true, and we're getting into territory here where it's. You know, I don't like splitting hairs in legal arguments, but there's things that happen in hockey that are kind of hockey, and whether or not we want to see them happen or not, like slew foots, like cross checks to the head, like high sticks, things like that, illegal checks. There's kind of an understanding that they can happen in hockey, mm-hmm. Spitting. Is a completely different thing. Like the licking last year was a completely, or 2 years ago was a completely different thing.
I can recall having a conversation with ex-NHL tough guy, NWHA tough guy for that matter, and ex-NHL referee Paul Stewart, who told me there was one player specifically in the league who every time he would drop the puck to open a game at center ice, this player would spit on his skates. There have been players, and a player like Builder Lego comes to mind right away, who was never shy when he saddled up to a face-off about letting go with a couple of nose rockets to try to get the other guy off of his face-off game. Like, if I can't believe I'm having this conversation, but here we go. If Hathaway doesn't spit at Goodbranson's face, but spits on his skates or spits on
probably
his sweater,
not. Probably what, not as big.
What's happening then?
But you know what? The thing is, Jeff, that's always the way it goes. Like people, this is the one thing I don't understand about people who argue about suspensions and stuff. They say, well, it should be the act, not the injury. Well, that's the way law works.
Yeah.
If I step on your foot and then I step on your face, I could cause 2 different injuries and my punishment's going to be more depending on what the injury is. If I spit on your skates, no, I'm not getting anything. But if I spit near your face, of course I'm going to get something.
How can you not get something, though, for spitting on someone's skates?
Yeah.
Spitting is just gross in general.
It is gross. You know, it's funny. Like on Saturday night, I talked about Curtis Lazar when Buffalo played Ottawa.
I saw
Ottawa,
that with the hamburger.
And someone, one of the former players texted me and they go, that's so disgusting. They say, players spit on the ice. Players piss on the ice. That guy ate a hamburger off the ice. It's the most disgusting thing ever. Look, you know, I sit next to Berkey when he's chewing that tobacco. I've walked in baseball dugouts where your shoes stick to the floor because the chewing tobacco in there and all the spitting that happens. Yeah. Look, I know that, you know, people can make all these arguments all they want. The fact is, like spitting like Hathaway did on Goodbranson, whether he meant it or not, is disgusting. And this is the league's way of saying, we're not letting this happen anymore. And I'm sure the Capitals are sitting here and saying, wait a sec, this guy licked people twice and he got nothing. If you want to justify the sucker punch as a provocation, there's no provocation for what Marchand did. And this guy's getting three games. They're going to say it's the difference between a star player and a guy who's a fourth liner. And they're going to be pissed off.
Normally, my radio training says to me, stretch out this conversation and do it longer. But I don't know that I have anything else to say about it. Do you, Freach?
I'm good.
31 Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra truck. Unique podcast here. So that news, the Hathaway news, comes right before we start, and then just before we go to the intro, you get a note.
A slight bit of breaking news.
Okay.
Which will not be breaking news by the time this gets released on Thursday. But basically, I was asking about an appeal. Would he appeal it? I was reminded that the final level of appeal here is with the commissioner. Because it's a suspension that's under six games, it can't go to an independent arbitrator. So Hathaway, the Capitals, and the Players Association have to believe that Gary Bettman is going to change Colin Campbell's ruling. And Bettman has said before that he has the right, if an appeal comes to him, to also increase the suspension.
Correct.
So I have a feeling the Capitals and Hathaway are going to let this go.
You think this might be Streisand effect if you draw too much attention to it, other than just letting the three games slide? Because if it becomes too much of a mainstream story.
No, I don't think it's got anything to do with a public reaction or the mainstream story or anything like that. To me, like, these appeals come down to, do the players think they can win them? Does the Players Association think they can win them? I remember one a couple of years ago, a player got a big suspension and the player told me he was going to appeal. And then I actually reported that. And then a day later, the note came back, I'm not going to appeal. And the reason was that him and his agent were walked through the situation and they were told they had no chance of winning. And I think the Players Association didn't want the precedent. They didn't want, that's what it all comes down to, right?
Sure.
The lawyers. And they didn't want anything that said that if we did this kind of thing, they were going to lose. So I'm looking at this and I'm seeing a situation where this cannot go past the commissioner. And I don't think they're going to want to test that. I could be wrong. It's happened once or twice. I don't think they're going to test that.
We'll see if this story becomes a theme all throughout the podcast as Elliot continues to send off texts and emails looking for more clarification or what may happen next in this situation. Meantime, Calgary Flames, and you're right about players like Johnny Gaudreau and Jankowski and Frolik and even the head coach, Bill Peters. Where's Brad Treliving right now with his team?
I thought you were actually playing Where's Waldo there for a couple seconds. Like, where is Brad Treliving actually?
Fine, Brad Treliving.
He was,
bring me Brad Treliving.
He was in Toronto GM meetings and I think he was scheduled to go meet his team in either St. Louis or Philadelphia because that's where they're headed off to. Look, there were these rumors the other day. Sometimes it's tough to tell. Like, because I am a reporter, sometimes you write things because you know them, and sometimes you write things because you're throwing stuff against the wall or you want to create discussion. Sometimes you're honestly wondering, and sometimes you write things that you know but can't actually say you know. So when a few Calgary reporters start writing about, is it time to trade Johnny Gaudreau? I'm sitting there and saying, wait a sec. Is there somebody in the Calgary organization that is saying, we're going to trade Johnny Gaudreau now? And my best answer is no. They're not going to do that. First of all, he's a career shooter of about 12.5%. He's about 7.8 right now. I think that's a pretty strong analytics organization. I think they pay attention to a lot of stuff. And I think they look at it like we recognize that. Put it this way, I do think he wants to make moves, but I don't think he's doing major surgery until either A, this season's lost, or he takes stock of it throughout the summer. You know, this is a GM who just got an extension, three additional years to this one. So he's got time. He's not under pressure to do that.
You don't think, though, that with the Calgary Flames and everything that happened last season, that before it gets to the point where the season is lost, something won't happen? I find it tough to sit here and think that Brad Treliving won't just see what happens and then make moves once it's past the point of no return.
I think he'd like to make moves now if he could. He's looking for a right winger, I heard. You know, I've heard Mark Jankowski's name out there. I could see teams being interested in Mark Jankowski. I know he's having an awful start to this year. He's got no points in 21 games. I mean, this is a guy who scored 31 goals the last 2 years, 17 in one and 14 in the other. I mean, there's a player there. He's a center, a bigger guy. You know, it's hard to find centers. And from what I understand, teams are looking at him and saying, well, a guy's got no points. And he's looking at him and saying, this guy had 31 goals the last 2 years. So, as you know, when you're drowning, they're not throwing you life preservers. No, they're throwing you anvils.
They're throwing you anvils fast. You know, last year we talked about this vis-a-vis the Oilers, and I think you and I had the conversation about, does it make it worse for Edmonton given how successful Calgary is during the year? Are we at the point now where we say the same thing but reversed? Making the Calgary situation worse is the work, the play, the everything right now of the Oilers.
I think that's for fans, and I get it. Fans are fans, but if you're running an organization like that, you're doomed. You're doomed. So the other guy has a better year than you, so we've got to completely change everything we're doing. That's what dumb organizations do, and I don't think the Flames will do that. I mean, look, people are making the comparisons early in the year about the Neil for Lucic deal. As far as I'm concerned, if you're Calgary, you just got to let that go. You made your decision, and whatever happens, happens. The choice is over. You can't change history. Let's go. So I don't worry about stuff like that. And I would hope for their sake, they're not worrying about that either.
Okay, so if Brad Treliving then is looking to be frisky in the trade market outside of Mark Jankowski, who could some targets be?
I think that some of the other guys they're going to look at internally, I mean, Frolik has been out there for a while. You know, TJ Brody had been. He went through a scary situation where they're very optimistic about his long-term future, but, you know, it probably means nothing is happening there. You know, the one name I've heard that I think is really interesting is Oliver Shillington. And you know your Oliver Shillington story.
Oh, yeah.
He played, what, for four teams in his draft year? The Flames were really happy. They traded up to get him, 60th overall.
I remember, you know, 2 years before that draft, they were saying he's going to go number two.
Yeah, and it looked like a very astute pick, and I think it still looks like a very astute pick. But, you know, Shillington's up with the big team right now, but he's only played about 12, 13 minutes a game, and I hear he wants to play more. Now, I don't think the Flames are really looking to do this, but I think they know that they can if they want to. And I'm curious to see what kind of nibbles they get on Shillington. They're also not close, from what I understand, on an extension with Travis Hamonic. I think there's a wide disagreement between what they're willing to offer and what Hamonic would like. And if that doesn't change closer to the trade deadline, I think you could see him get moved. But right now, you know, Jankowski, Shillington, they're kind of out there. You know, what does that get you? Does that get you some short-term relief? Because I think he'd like to do something.
Not that it was ever a burner team to begin with, but just as an eyeball observation, every time I watch Calgary, they just seem slower than whomever they're playing with. And I know that speed's never going to be, you know, Sean Monahan's main accent. But it's not just him. And I know we've talked about Matthew Tkachuk, and he's not Pavel Bure. He brings other things to the game that are certainly valuable. But at the end of it, doesn't it just look like Calgary's slow?
Well, especially with Gaudreau not going, right? And when we were out at the outdoor game in Regina, one of the Flames told me that he gains the blue line like he normally does, but then he's really struggling making plays. The player said to me, it's almost as if he's not processing it like he normally does. And you can see it.
The thing is, and you see this with Gaudreau sometimes this season, he's struggling. And some players do this, and I think Johnny Gaudreau is one of them. When they're struggling, they try to do more than they should to compensate.
Yep.
And I think you see that with Johnny Gaudreau. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I do. What did Gretzky always say? The best players see the game slower than everybody else. It's almost like he's not doing that right now. like everything's speeding up and he's rushing to do things and he's all confused. And unfortunately, because of that, it takes Monahan down with him because Monahan is the finisher and he's not getting the puck where he needs to do it. I wondered if Monahan's name would be out there, that they'd be interested in trading him. I didn't find that.
Mm.
You know, someone told me that Calgary asked Monahan to do some things better on faceoffs. He's at a career best percentage. He's 56%. Be a little heavier, and they feel he's done that. If you look at his shot chart, where does he score from? He scores right from right in front of the net.
Right in front of the net.
And I remember looking before game five of the Colorado series, which was the game where the Avalanche knocked them out. He had one shot from the slot 5-on-5 before game five. If he's not getting it there, he can't score.
Do you buy the theory that they're still suffering from the Avalanche shock and awe campaign from last year's playoffs?
I did. And then a couple of players disputed it with me at the outdoor game. The one thing I do believe, though, Jeff, is that I do think there was some thought of we hit our peak last year too early. We're going to wait. And now they can't get going. And I'll tell you something else, too. I know the Peters thing is coming up. This is a team that gave up on Glenn Gullison at the end. And Calgary made the coaching change. I think there is a very strong feeling organizationally that they're not letting that happen again. You know, we changed the coach once,
mm-hmm.
and Gullison is one of the nicest guys around. They kind of took advantage of that. They're not letting them get away with it again. I've heard the organization feels very strongly about that.
Canadian teams, that squad in trouble in the West, and one Canadian team very much in trouble in the East outside of the playoff picture, much like Calgary, and that is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
The Mike Babcock era in Toronto is over. The Leafs announcing late this afternoon that they fired their head coach.
Shanahan says he flew to Arizona today to join the team so he could be the one to break the news to Mike Babcock, along with GM Kyle Dubas.
Seeing as I had been the one that hired Mike, I thought that it was very important for me to get on a plane this morning and fly here and face Mike and be with Kyle to tell him myself that we had made a decision together that we thought was in the best interest of the club.
Babcock's successor has already been named, Sheldon Keefe.
Yes, as many of you predicted on Twitter, this is an insert because after Elliot, we finished recording the podcast this afternoon, a couple of things happened. One, the Mike Babcock, Sheldon Keefe news, and two, the Dustin Byfuglien situation. So we'll set the scene here right now. It is 10:45 Eastern on Wednesday night. We've just finished doing the Ottawa Senators Montreal Canadiens game. We've come down to the 8th floor to do an insert, and we've brought Brian Burke along with us.
But please stay tuned anyway. can I just say one thing before we start? Does it not seem that Garnet Hathaway spit suspension happened 3 weeks ago?
And he did it about a million years ago. Like, this news cycle today has been berserk.
Yes.
But here we are. And, you know, it's great that you, Brian, decided to come down here with us because Elliot and I can just sort of pontificate on what this means. Elliot's covered stories like this before, but you've lived stories like this before. You've been in that chair and had to make those decisions, had to have those conversations. What did you think of the Mike Babcock dismissal in Toronto?
I think they made the right call in the sense that they are convinced that he lost the team. And once you've lost the team, there's no reason to wait. There's no reason to waste the next two or three or four games seeing if somehow he can resurrect himself. And when you fire a coach, it's hard on you, too. You know, this is a guy that you travel with for the last 4 or 5 years. He would have eaten dinner in your home. He would have eaten meals on the road. And you get close to it. Even a coach you know you have to fire, you get close to him. So it was a hard day for Shanny and Kyle, too.
How does that conversation even start? So Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, first of all, they fly to Arizona. Okay, so
but
Mike
you know
Babcock,
they've already got approval from the board at that time.
Right. So how does the conversation, so if you're...
You don't have to say much. Once Shanny said he was coming, Mike knew right away. Now, it's like in the NFL. When they say the coach says to coach wants to see you, the trainer assistant coach comes in and says, coach wants to see you, bring your playbook. That means you're going home.
That's, and the playbook is staying.
You turn in your playbook and you're going home. Same thing here. when I walked into the Maple Leafs office the day I got fired, and I saw there were three people there, all looking for loose change on the floor, no one to make eye contact, I knew right away I was done. And I hadn't realized it till then. Once he got that phone call, hey, we're going to drop by, down today. We're going to fly 3,000 miles and visit you. He knew it was coming right then. He knew it was over. I bet she booked a flight right away.
I've had two different stories told to me tonight.
Okay.
Number one, that the final decision was made after that Pittsburgh game. But somebody also told me that they'd been considering it in the days leading up to that, that the sequence was set in motion. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were planning on doing it on Wednesday. It's interesting that they flew down in the middle of a road trip. I still believe there's a possibility they might have done it later, like, for example, in that three-day break between Colorado and Detroit.
Yeah.
But certainly things got rushed. Brian, how many coaches did you fire?
I fired Jimmy Roberts when I took over in Hartford. I fired Ron Wilson.
And you didn't retain Babcock. You didn't fire him.
No. And the story, I can tell it quickly. So Mike was the head coach in Anaheim when I got hired. But he never coached a game for me. And yet I didn't fire him. And I just felt, and I said to Mike, I said, I know Detroit has already approached you, even though they're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. I know they've tampered. You and Kenny Holland are best friends. You should make your deal with them. Mainly because of the style of play. I like a crude style of play. Mike's kind of a Greenpeace guy. So I said, you know, you make your deal with Detroit. So I never fired him. And I would not have fired him. If Detroit had not stepped up, I would have figured something else out to make it work. Because I think he's a good guy and a good coach.
Okay, so this is the one thing. So Jimmy Roberts, that's 25 years ago, right? Yeah. So how much has changed between now and then in terms of I have to go to my owner, and how long does this process take?
Well, if you've got a sole owner, like in Hartford, I got hired. There's one guy owned 100% of the team, Richard Gordon. I just went to him and said, I'm not keeping this coach. In the interview process, I told him. Mm-hmm. I said, I need a cruder style coach. Jimmy Roberts is a great guy. But I said, I want Paul Holmgren to coach this team. And so that was done. It was kind of pre-approved. But, you know, in Toronto, I had to go in Richard Petty, and then he would approach the board and, you know, talk to Larry and so on. But yeah, you definitely have to get the wheels in motion. But by the time you're concluding that you should fire the coach, everyone's expecting it anyway. It's not like the owners are like, oh my God, you're thinking of firing the coach. We just lost 9 in a row or whatever, right?
I think coaches know, Jeff. I think they do. I mean, I don't have Brian's experience, but I've been around to see it. And there's no way Mike Babcock didn't see this coming. I can't understand how anybody would think after that Pittsburgh game that something big, either trade or coach, wasn't going to happen.
Ultimately, we'll never know the answer to this question unless one of the primaries says something about it. But if the Leafs don't lose that game against Vegas, is there still a new coach in Toronto? We have seen coaches fired after wins, so it wouldn't be the first time.
DiCarbonell, who went to the Hall of Fame, was fired. Yeah. These guys are process guys. This was happening even if they beat Vegas.
When we fired Bob McCammon in Vancouver, we actually played a really respectable game that night. We outshot the Rangers badly. I think we had 45 shots on net. And I remember saying to Pat Quinn, you know, like, does this change our evaluation? And Pat's like, no. He said, we follow a process here. We determine we're going to make a coaching change, and by God, we're making a coaching change. He said, even if we'd won tonight by 8 goals, we still were going to make that change.
This is an interesting scenario for Kyle Dubas and now Sheldon Keefe, who were together in the OHL, together in the AHL, and are now together in the NHL. I can't think of another GM-coach combo that's done that. Paul Maurice and Jim Rutherford were together in the OHL and NHL, but never in the American Hockey League. So this, it might just be new territory in the NHL. But it did seem, Elliot, as if there was a certain inevitability in all of this. You know, right down the street, the Maple Leafs rink is the Marlies rink, and Sheldon Keefe was there. Successful at the American Hockey League level, won a Calder Cup. We could all remember the visuals of Kyle Dubas holding the Calder Cup in celebration. He was the next Maple Leaf coach in waiting. It just seemed as if the only question was going to be when.
Again, I don't know who would argue with that either. Larry Tannenbaum's role is interesting in all this, the chairman of the board. And he doesn't have majority control anymore, because the two telecoms, the good telecom Rogers and the evil telecom Bell, own a combined 75%. But he does have still have a lot of say. And I think he's very loyal to his staff. I think he would be very loyal to Mike Babcock, but I think he would have been very loyal to Dwayne Casey too. And eventually you come to a point where he realizes you've got to make a change and let your people make a change. I think Dwayne Casey went to the playoffs for 5 years before they made the change. So far, Mike Babcock had gone to the playoffs for 3 years, and I don't necessarily think that Tannenbaum or even Shanahan in the summer, Brian, would have wanted this to happen yet.
No, I think they wanted to get one more year out of him and give him a chance to solve that playoff issue.
Mm-hmm.
They even switched out both assistant coaches, which is what you do when you're trying to save a head coach's job. I did it the summer before I fired Ronnie Wilson. I replaced Rob Zettler and Tim Hunter. And I told them both, this is grossly unjust. You're being sacrificed so that I can save the head coach. And we brought in two new assistants, Scott Gordon and Greg Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kyle will sleep well tonight. Well, he's not going to sleep well because these are terrible days. The one thing he won't have gnawing at him is guilt that he didn't try to save the coach. I'm with you. I think they intended for him to coach this team, see if he could solve the playoff issue, and then promote Sheldon.
So what's the Babcock era then in Toronto? When you look back on Mike Babcock, now ex-head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, when you look at his work with the Leafs, what's going to be the legacy for you guys?
Well, he had 105 points, which I think is a franchise record, isn't it? 105-point season. He developed Mitch Marner from a young green kid into a pretty good hockey player. Same with Matthews. I don't think that's his strength, but I think that'll be his legacy here. But it's going to be regarded over time as negative. You know, like, I never won a playoff round here, and no one's won since they fired me. So that's, you know, that's the legacy is this is not about 105 points. It's about getting four wins in a playoff round, which he was unable to do. But you could see people were so excited with the pitchforks and the torches outside the Scotiabank Arena. And that's, in Toronto, that's what happens when you get the rumor of a firing or the possible demise of a coach. It just gets fed by like a huge fire. And a lot of people jumping on Mike's grave tonight that really shouldn't be. He did a lot of good things.
You know, I'd like to say a couple of things about Mike Babcock. Human beings are complex. You know, Berkey, I bet you there's a lot of people that, you know, you're a perfect example, okay? And I mean this, it's going to come out completely ridiculous, but
awesome.
I mean it the
this
right way.
This is going to be great.
There are people in the world who think you're an asshole, and there are people in the world who think you're a great guy, and they can both be right.
Yeah.
And I think people are complex. You know, I think when you are the coach of a team and you are being taught to teach a young team to win, there is a certain prickishness that has to come out of you. And I could see why players may not like that. But I'll tell you about another Mike Babcock. There was a time last year where I got an email from a fan in Saskatchewan, I believe they were from, and they were writing on behalf of their uncle who went to high school with Mike Babcock. And the uncle was very ill, and it didn't look promising. And they said, look, my uncle went to high school with Mike Babcock. I don't know if they really knew each other, but he always brags about it. Mm. And, you know, would Mike Babcock be able to send him a message? And I forwarded it to Steve Keogh. I said, it's Steve Keogh, for those of you who don't know, runs the media relations department for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I said, Steve, you know, I'm going to give this to you. I know you probably get a million of these, but I just wanted to forward this to you because it, you know, it looks legit. Within 24 hours, I had an email back from that person saying, I can't tell you how thankful I am. We got a video from Mike Babcock.
Wow.
And the person ended up, he passed away a few months later. I also know of another situation firsthand where somebody was really struggling, and this was before he came to Toronto. He was the coach in Detroit. And Babcock made time to speak to that person and gave them advice that put them on a straight path and still resonates with that person today. Someone can be tough to deal with as players, but still be phenomenal to deal with other people. And I think that should be known. about Babcock. I think there are definitely as many people out there who may not like him. I guarantee you that there's as many people that love him because of the stuff he's done for them, stuff that isn't as seen as public. And I believe that's an important part of his legacy. I think human beings are complex, and we shouldn't always judge by what we see.
I agree with that. I went pheasant hunting in Alberta, and afterwards we went into the clubhouse and had a beer. And there's a picture of Mike Babcock on the wall with a bunch of guys. And so I said to the guy who ran the club, I said, when was Mike Babcock here? He said, oh, he came here 2 years ago. Detroit was in town, and he came out and did a pheasant hunt. And I said, what was he like? He said, oh, he couldn't have been nicer. He signed autographs for everybody, asked how their kids were. So there is a side to him. And my social encounters with Mike have been very pleasant. I think he's a good guy. I talked to a guy once who played college hockey with him, said he was tough as nails. Big penalty minutes when he played at McGill. I mean, highly educated, good guy, good family guy. That's the part no one cares about at the end, though. I remember when I got canned here, I remember the very first day that I was out of work, I went to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never gone to a movie on a weekday in my life, and I went to the movies by myself, which I always thought only lonely people did, but I did. It was Jack Reacher. It was great.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. But I remember the number of people who reached out, the people that you care about that reached out, hey, hope you're doing okay. I must have gotten 500, 600 texts and phone calls in the 48 hours after. The hockey community does care, and there are a lot of good people, and Mike's a good person. It's time for a change here, but yep. You're right. That side shouldn't be overlooked.
It's just time.
Well, what's the, before we get to Sheldon Keefe, because you went through it, Brian, what's the Toronto experience? I mean, a lot of people say, oh, I know what I'm getting into. I know what I'm signing up for. And then by the end, it's like they just come back from Verdun in 1916.
Yeah, and I watched it age, friends of mine that have worked in this marketplace. I didn't feel it did to me because I ignored all the white noise. I remember a writer came to my office once and he said, I know you tell us that you don't read this stuff, but we know you do. And I took him outside. It's my desk. So my assistant was there and they had the clip. So every day, the PR guy, Pat Park, would drop off the clips. Mm-hmm. So he had the national clips and the Toronto clips, and they're dated. And this is an 18 inches high pile of clips. And I said to this writer, you go through those clips. If one day is missing, if I've looked at one day of those clips, I'll apologize. But I said, I'll show you what I do with them. When the stack gets too high, I grabbed a recycling bin and shoved them all in the recycling bin. He was furious. But I think the key here, it's really hard to win here because – there's 80 people. Like in Calgary, we'd have 30 people after practice. Mm-hmm. There's 80 here in the room. And when you struggle, they all pick up a rock and throw it. So it was Ron Wilson, it was me, it was Phil Kessel, it was Dion, whatever it was. But there's 100 rocks, 80 rocks being thrown when you lose versus 30 in Calgary. And so it is really hard to work here. It's really hard to win here. They're finding that out now. Brendan and his group are finding that out now because they've had a pretty good run up till this year. Now you see how hard it is to win here. But I think the key is you got to tune out the noise. I think Shanny does that well.
You know, I'll tell you this. One thing about Babcock, I think he took a lot of heat for other people. Knew in the last couple of weeks it was all on him, and
yeah,
he didn't run away from it.
I agree with that, but he did. He picked fights, public fights with the GM too, which is suicidal.
Yes,
right. Over the backup goaltender, over Spezza. And I would have had a fist fight with my coach if he did that. I would have gone down and said, you can disagree with me all you want. You can call me a moron when we're in this office. When we walk out, we link arms and we say the same thing. But he publicly picked fights with Kyle, which I thought was insubordination.
And, that was the whole thing about this that was weird. If you look back, so Brandon Shanahan, who did he hire first? He hired the coach. And then he hired Lou Lamoriello. And then he blocked Kyle Dubas from going to Colorado. And the story I always heard was that Babcock himself said, you blocked him from going to Colorado. He's got to be the next GM.
Yeah.
And then he made him the GM. Now, for the first time since Babcock came to Toronto, the GM has hired the head coach. The whole thing was weird. It was never balanced.
Never the proper sequence.
Yes, never the... And it's no one's fault. It kind of worked out weirdly because Lamoriello wasn't out in New Jersey for Ray Shiro until after Babcock was hired. But the whole thing was never in proper balance. And this is the first time it's in proper balance.
Yep. But all the gun sights that were trained on Mike Babcock are now trained on Kyle Dubas.
Yep.
And a few on Shanny.
And the players.
If I don't say anything else that survives this taping, the players should be ashamed of themselves tonight. They quit on this team. They quit on this coach. They're not going to get any rocks thrown at them hardly at all, but they should. I would be so mad at this group if I were Brendan Shanahan.
I'm sure he said something.
The Pittsburgh game to me, I wanted every fan that came to that game, if it had been in Toronto, should have got an air sickness bag as they came through the door.
You know, I remember, and what I think about that Pittsburgh game was back when I covered the NBA.
Hey, oh, it's been a while for that one.
I've been saving that one for a while. Butch Carter was coaching the Raptors. They traded for Antonio Davis. And I believe it was his first game back in Indiana after he got traded to the Raptors. And they got killed. And Butch Carter came out and he was furious. He's like, they're supposed to love this guy as a teammate. That's the way you play for a guy you supposedly like. Mm. I remember Pat Quinn, his coach of the league, blowing his stack that Glenn Healy lost a shutout, I think against Vancouver, in the last minute. He said, like, that's supposed to be a popular teammate, and that's the way you play for him. You know, Cascasuo, first NHL game, a few of those guys have played with him. That was bad. And, one player told me that the angriest they ever saw Shanahan in Toronto was after a salute gate.
Right.
So they didn't salute the fans after a win because they were mad about booing. And it picked up steam the next day. And Shanahan goes into the room after practice is over and before the media is allowed in and says, you guys better have an answer for this because this is a story. And he didn't like their answer to the media and he blew up at them. Now, he said that Kyle Dubas went to speak to the players today. I'm sure Shanahan's going to say something, Brian.
I think what they need right now, it'd be a fragile group because they will feel some shame and heat and they will feel some remorse. The guys that care anyway, there's some guys and some of these millennials that just don't get it. But I think it's a real tough love message. Like, you guys, you owe us one now. You got to pick it up. But then they're going to need some hugs too because they just lost six in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go after a team that's down in a ditch like that. You can yell at them a little bit. You can curse at them a little bit. But you better have some hope in that message too.
Sheldon Keefe, here's someone that in the OHL, Kyle Dubas went to bat for. He had always been an impressive coach when he was with Pembroke, the Lumber Kings, and was always considered, and we all know what happened with Sheldon through the OHL into his pro career. He was always considered an outstanding coach who would never get a chance in the OHL because of his past and how him and other teammates behaved when they're at the Memorial Cup. Was never going to get a chance. And Kyle Dubas stuck his neck out and hired him in the Sioux. And I can tell you, at that time, that was not a very popular decision amongst the OHL and amongst teams in the OHL, certainly people that had been in the Ontario Hockey League for a number of years.
The NHL teams didn't like it either.
Is that right, hey?
Yeah.
You guys talked about that?
Oh, yeah.
What was the nature of the conversation? I've never heard that side of it.
What was he thinking? What's this kid thinking? Because Kyle was just a kid.
Yeah.
Like, A, what's he doing running a team? And B, what's he thinking?
His thought was right, though. Oh, and he got a fantastic OHL coach.
Mid-season hire, and he came in, and they were awful. And they went on a tear. Like, his winning percentage in the OHL and in the American League is staggering.
Yep.
Absolutely staggering. So, to me, you can discount the Marley stats a little bit because the Toronto Maple Leafs have committed so many resources to being a competitive team. Okay, every team in the American League travels with one bus, not the Marlies.
Two.
They have two.
Mm.
You got to have two. One staff bus and one player bus. But they have 6-7 one-ways, some big two-ways, guys making $400,000 in the minors, and they've bought a lot of those wins. So you have to discount it a little bit. But I think this guy's a coach.
AHL teams, I mean, Chicago Wolves would load up on guys. Here comes Darren Haydar at a big ticket.
Yep. Got to win.
Two or three or four guys maybe. But the Marlies, the year they won the Calder Cup, they spent a lot of money on that team. Last year they spent a lot of money too. And this year is going to be even worse, I'm sure. You know, Kenny Agostino down there, Ben Harper's down there. I mean, list goes on and on. They're all one-way contracts or big two-ways. So now, that being said, it discounted a little bit. Still got to win.
Yeah.
And he's won staggering numbers of games everywhere he's coached. I say give this guy a chance.
Well, and here becomes the question then. Who does this benefit the most? Like if you look at all the players on that roster, because and Brian, you've seen this countless times. Elliot, you've covered this countless times. There are players that benefit when the new coach comes in, and there are players that don't. Who benefits here?
Tyson Berry.
Yep.
I would bet would be the first one to benefit. I'm wondering if it's Riley Berry like it was at the end of Vegas the other night.
And first power play.
And first power play. You know, we talked about Berry on Saturday night. I got a text, and the guy told me tonight, you can say it. I got a text on Monday from another team, and the guy said that when he heard the Berry news get out, he was thinking that it was the end. Hmm. Because that wasn't good for Toronto that got out.
Right.
And it wasn't good for their situation that got out. And so I think the Berry one, and, you know, we talked at the end of the show tonight. I don't necessarily think that Austin Matthews wasn't getting enough ice time, but I look at what's happening in Edmonton with Draisaitl and McDavid, and I wonder if you've got to give Matthews a 23, 24-minute run.
Not just that. There's got to be situational time use that makes sense. So you're down by two goals in the third period. Double shift him. He's a kid. He can take a couple double shifts. Get him out there. He's got the hardest shot on the team. He's their best scoring threat with Marner hurt. Get him out there. So my one criticism of Mike in the playoffs last year and early in this year is his inflexibility in game. His refusal or, you know, he just absolutely didn't consider juggling lines, double shifting people, benching people. In Detroit, this worked. They had a really good team, and he could roll four, and they all knew their jobs, and a little different with this team. So I as a GM, I would have wanted to see more adjustments, and I think you'll see that right away. I think Berry will get power play one time. The guy that should be nervous for me is William Nylander, because I don't think his effort is going to be good enough for this new coach.
And by the way, Keefe does have a reputation for being somebody who fiddles around in game.
Yeah.
So I would agree with Brian on that. That's the first smart thing Brian said on this podcast.
I can't believe I agreed to do this.
Okay, we'll end that topic then on a high note for Brian Burke. One more thing before we get back to the podcast that has already been recorded is the Dustin Byfuglien situation and the NHL Players Association announcing a grievance. They're going to challenge the suspension to Dustin Byfuglien. Brian, we'll start with you because you've been, you know, from the NHL's side of things, you more than any of us understand the exit medical.
Right.
And how sacred that is and how valuable that is
right.
to the NHL. This is what this whole thing hinges on. Actually, Elliot, you could probably describe it better than me and Brian can.
No.
The situation is that, correct me if I'm wrong here, Dustin Byfuglien signed off last spring.
That he was fit to play.
That he was fit to play in his final
right.
medical evaluation.
So people should understand this. They do an exit physical. And the player and the team doctor and the athletic therapist have to all sign it. My information is that Dustin Byfuglien signed this form that said fit to play. Then the doctor independently files a fit to play form. It's a form 25A. And he files that. And he's the only one that signs that. But the player has to sign the exit physical memo, which our information is Dustin Byfuglien signed that. Now he's claiming he has a hockey injury. Problem is, for teams, any player can do this. If that exit physical isn't binding, if that document isn't sacred, then any player can come up in August. He could get hurt mountain biking and say, I have a hockey injury. This is sacred to the teams. And it's very critical that they are entitled to rely upon this. So I expect the league to fight this tooth and nail, fight to the bitter end. There's enough money involved, first off, in this case, that the team and the league are going to push anyway. But the principle here that this would open the door for any player to come back, I think they need to solve that. And if they lose this grievance, they will make this a point, no new CBA unless this is addressed.
So that is, from the NHL's point of view, this is less about Dustin Byfuglien and more about a precedent.
The process, yeah.
That's what they're concerned about. How do you see this one, Elliot?
I think Brian's take on it is 100% right. I can tell you what the, in terms of what the league is thinking, I can tell you what the player is going to argue is that it never really healed. But I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, you know, you're a lawyer. How many times did you go up in front of a judge or arbitrator and think I've gotten their tight case and lose?
Like, yeah, and that's the risk, and that's why the league's going to fight this, because they have to win this, and if they lose it, they will make this the number one priority before a new CBA is executed. They'll say, by the way, guys, mm-hmm. we are closing that loophole forever, or we are not extending. We are not going to have 10 claims a summer and 10 workers' comps claims in the summertime and contractual things. This form has to be binding, and it's got to be sacred.
If this thing goes to arbitration, is there any chance that Dustin Byfuglien, if he decides and is healthy enough to go back to the Winnipeg Jets, has any desire to go back to the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, that's just what complicates it, because he told them he didn't want to play.
Yeah.
This injury thing came up later, and maybe the union suggested it to him, or maybe the agent thought, well, I want to get my commission. This came up later, and all of a sudden, oh, I'm hurt. So the league doesn't like the sequence. The team doesn't like the sequence. Could he go back there and play? I think it'd be hard.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think the team wants him back. He might not want to go back, and I've heard rumors to that effect, that he does not want to play for the Jets, but he hasn't spoken yet, so I don't know for sure. I've heard the team wants him back. I believe that. I think the toughest thing for the Jets is, I think they've tried to make moves. I think they were in on Joel Edmondson. I think they had some interest in Justin Falk, but they've got this $7.6 million thing there that they can't really do anything about, because what happens if he gets reinstated? It's stuck. So they're in a holding pattern until this all gets sorted out. And by the way, this might be the best coaching job of Paul Maurice's career.
He's been great.
From the moment, like with all the crap they went through, from the contract disputes to this and everything that they went through and the infighting that was going on in that room, he showed up as Captain Positive, and he's done an unbelievable job. I mean, he's in the last year of his contract. He's done an unreal job.
I agree.
And I'll tell you what, I never thought that I would enjoy watching Blake Wheeler, because they've separated Wheeler and Shifley. Mm-hmm. Seeing Wheeler play center like this. Like, he looks like a different Nick Ehlers.
Line A looks like a different player.
Well, he is. He's moving the puck. He's passing. Brian, you brought up the point. Listen, I'm paraphrasing Brian Burke here, who says, if he's not giving you goals, he's giving you nothing. But this year, he's giving you more than goals, Brian.
Oh, he's making plays. He's back-checking. He's forechecking. He is what he appeared to be in his draft year. Then he turned into a selfish, lazy guy, and now he's found religion somehow. He's a much more effective player than he was the last couple of years. I told Blake Wheeler, I had him in the World Championships a few years ago, and I told him, you're the most improved American player in the NHL. And then I don't think we used him enough in Sochi. I think he really could have made a difference when we were playing Canada, and mm-hmm. the coaches didn't use him. But then I corrected him. I said, a couple years later, I said, you're the most improved player in the National Hockey League. Forget American player. Like, this is a guy, his draft year was soft skill. He's willed himself into a hard skill player. He's got size. He recovers pucks. He makes plays. He's doing a really impressive job.
Should mention Hellebuck, too.
I was going to say,
kind of important in all this.
It's kind of important, and it's easy to be a real good coach when you're getting a goaltending performance like Connor Hellebuck.
Alain Vigneault's line, if your goaler beats my goaler, you win. If my goaler beats your goaler, I win.
Well, and Elliot, you were saying that the save percentage in the NHL is the lowest it's been in years, but I think right now there's a little bit of the year of the goalie in this. We got some guys who are scuffling that are bringing the averages down. But there's a number of goalies who are stars right now. Stars.
Year of the goalie or year of the backup goalie?
Yeah, year of the goalie, I'd say. It might turn into the year of the backup goalie the way
not
a couple
everywhere.
Teams are going.
No, it's not back year of the backup. But if you don't have the backup goaltender, then you're really sunk, as we just sort of wink at the first conversation we had here with the Maple Leafs. We good for the night, gentlemen?
Yep.
Anything else to add?
I'm betting that there are some nervous coaches in the NHL knowing that Mike Babcock is a free agent.
Here's the question, though. Does he want to coach again right away? Like, when you go through the ringer that is Toronto, Elliot, don't you need to decompress a little bit first?
I don't know. I think he likes it. Nothing would surprise me if he goes, as he would say, hunting and fishing for a little bit, maybe. But he's wired a certain way. If the right opportunity came along, I think he'd do it.
Okay, back to the podcast now.
Now, back to our program.
off the Maple Leafs page. Matt Calvert on Saturday.
We're going to take another look at this injury to Matt Calvert. And, you know, a lot of people probably going to wonder why they didn't blow this down. This one goes off of his stick and catches him up in the side of the face. And he was down for a while. I didn't even really know what happened. Maybe the officials didn't either. Usually when a puck hits someone in the face, it's blown down pretty quickly. But they might have thought that it went off somewhere. There's the save right there with the right pad by Bebo in tight.
Faceoff win again by the Canucks. They control it. At the point, it's Hughes to Pettersson.
I understand the rule.
Yeah.
I also understand that was frightening. I also understand a distressed player. I also understand not just referees can blow it dead, but there's a distressed player on the ice and linesmen can too. I understand that we've watched it a million times and been able to make up our minds quicker than those officials could. But I still haven't changed my mind on it about blowing that whistle.
I agree. 100%. No, I agree. But, and one of the theories I came up with was, you know.
Are you pandering to social media?
Yes,
by the way?
Yes, I am.
I'm wondering about that.
I'm pandering to social media even worse than you are. But one of the things that I remembered was we worked the opening night of the year. It was Edmonton, Vancouver. And remember that Connor McDavid got that. Vancouver scored, actually, because Connor McDavid had to go get his helmet, right?
Yes.
So I don't understand why you can't make that call, that injury call, the same way as the helmet call. Why can't we just say, all right, Matt Calvert's down. He has no reputation as a diver. Does Vancouver have a shot? Yes, let them have the shot. No. Oh, they're going to pass it around for 5 seconds? We're not having that. That's what you do right now. If your helmet falls off during play, mm-hmm. Are you involved in the play? Yes, keep playing. No, either put that thing back on properly or go to the bench or you're getting a penalty. Maybe we can have the same standard.
Let me ask you a question. It's an opinion one.
You're allowed to ask questions. You're the host.
There are no stupid questions, only stupid people asking questions, and I count myself one of them. As soon as Elias Pettersson lets go of that shot, you can see the shock on his face, and he's concerned right away about Matt Calvert. Now, the officials aren't going to blow it down. You assume that the bench is howling. Avalanche players on the ice are howling as well to call that thing down. And the hue and cry afterwards, whether it was Nathan MacKinnon on After Hours.
Nathan, the guest says you got somewhere to go tonight because you looked like you weren't intent on having that overtime go any more than 30 or 40 seconds.
Yeah, Rick, I mean, it's tough letting them tie it up. I think we're all pretty determined to, we wanted to end that quickly. You know, that rule is pretty crazy. A guy laying there bleeding out to the side of his head. I can only imagine if that was LeBron James and his head was bleeding and they let that their team either take a 3-point to tie up the game. I know it's not the ref's fault. It's the league rule. I think you got to look and see who's laying on the ice. It's Matt Calvert, one of the toughest guys I've ever played with, and I don't think he's faking it. Try to get a whistle.
Whether it was Eric Johnson afterwards in a scrum where he was quite vocal about his displeasure.
Like, you want to protect a guy? The guy's got a family at home. He's laying there bleeding out of his head, and they don't blow the f***ing whistle. It's a complete joke. It's an absolute joke. They should be ashamed of themselves.
I mean, so when you see this kind of stuff, I mean, what, is there a need to go lobby to the NHL? I mean, do you guys have that sort of power to say change the rule, or what is the discussion?
What if he laid there and died on the ice? To let an offensive zone play continue? Complete joke. It needs to change. If it was one of their guys, I'd expect the same thing.
What would the response have been if a Vancouver Canuck player, in that passing sequence, just passed that puck to an Avalanche player?
So you do it the soccer way, which is that you kick the ball out of bounds and then the other team throws it back to you?
Yeah.
So
in minor hockey, a lot of teams, like in that situation, if it's not getting blown, our team, my kids, minor Adam squad just went through that, or I guess U10 we'll call it now. Squad just went through that with a kid that went down on Saturday, got a slap shot in the chest and he was down. The referees did not blow it and he was down writhing in pain, but we didn't have possession. And then you saw that on Saturday night. Now, a lot of teams will instruct at the minor level. Okay, this is like 9-10-year-olds, minor hockey level. Give the puck to the opposition. Just surrender possession. There are things that are more important.
This is going to reveal me to be a terrible human being, which I freely admit. But you can't have the same expectation of kids
No, I know.
And the Canucks.
No, I'm just saying, like, this isn't foreign to capital H hockey.
Yes, I know it happens.
I know NHL is a different creature altogether. But the follow-up as Nathan McKinnon...
No, hang on.
The follow-up to like Nathan McKinnon or Johnson when they're talking about this is, well, would you have surrendered the puck then? If it's clear that the officials weren't doing the job
that
you
like
wanted
that
them to do, would you have flipped the puck out, like just done anything to get a whistle? Essentially, what you're saying is, are there things that are more important than scoring that goal at that time?
I don't like this. I think this is a bit of a false equivalency or of... Maybe not false equivalence is the right term.
No, I'm just unmasking you as a bad human being.
Yeah,
that's all. You're uncomfortable with that.
But it's not that I'm uncomfortable with it, because I'm, like I said, I'm freely willing to admit I'm an awful human. But that shouldn't even be in the conversation. It should be up to the officials. The worst one was Wierenski. He was bleeding even more than, well, at least in terms of visuals, the worst one was Wierenski. And it's in the playoffs. The Penguins passed the puck around for 10 seconds and scored. Like, yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, that would happen. But in a real world, it's not going to happen as much as you'd like. Don't put the responsibility in the hands of the players. Just do it the same way you do it for the helmet rule. Are you in the play? Or is the play legitimately resulting in a chance? Yeah. Is it not resulting in a chance? No, you're passing it around? Blow it dead. Now, I will say this. There are some guys who have reputations as divers.
Yeah, I'm not Matt Calvert.
But not Matt Calvert, and as
you
far as I know...
He's managed up like a Civil War soldier and go back in the game.
You know the other thing, too? I'm glad you mentioned the reaction of the Avalanche. A, that's the sign of a really close team, and B, that's the sign of a really popular player, the way that McKinnon and Johnson went off on it. And neither one of those guys needs a lot of excuse to be blunt in their commentary. They're both great interviews, but that says to me that A, is a popular player... But B, just don't put it upon the players to be nice guys.
No, but the question was...
They are competitive, and they're supposed to try and win.
I just wonder what the response would have been. Just, I mean, you saw Elias Pettersson right away. His first thought is, oh man, this is bad for this guy. Let's say Elias Pettersson would have just shoveled the puck to someone on the Avalanche and the play was blown dead. I'm interested in extreme situations.
I'm sure
and that
he
is
would
an
have
extreme
gotten,
situation.
I'm sure he would have gotten a huge ovation and he would have gotten a lot of praise.
And when he went back to the bench...
He probably would have been fine. Although Travis Green hasn't smiled in a game in the 3.5 years he's coached, so he wouldn't have smiled. Yeah. But, you know, what happens the next time when somebody doesn't pass it to someone? Or the Canucks need the game for the playoffs and Pettersson winds up and drills it home?
Yeah. Like many of us.
I believe
I'm just curious,
that-
in human behavior... When pressed to the extreme, and that was an extreme situation where a player was in significant distress.
Yeah.
How do we react?
Of course. And the thing is, it's tough. That's why I think it should be up to the officials, not the players. There is a certain expectation that a player is going to perform to a high level. And you're not always going to know, and you're not always going to recognize the situation. And sometimes it's going to be like you're losing
the nose right away.
But yeah, but you're losing in a game that you absolutely have to have. I'm sure privately, like if you did that, let's just say you played for the Vancouver Canucks and they missed the playoff by a point. And somebody says to you, Jeff, do you remember when you were nice and you passed the puck and somebody was open right there?
You know what I think this is, Elliot?
What?
Honestly, for me, this is an age thing. Because 20-year-old Jeff Merrick reacts a lot differently.
Yes, totally.
That to me,
and
this,
also
this,
like
this
for
is,
kids.
Like honestly, and things, and you know this, things change when you have kids. And I maintain that the NHL has gotten quote unquote softer or has softened.
Oh, there's no
when it comes
about
to when it comes to physicality. And I think a lot of it is, you know, we never really saw general managers or executives in the NHL. With their kids playing in the league, the likes of which that we've seen over the past 30 years. This is a fairly recent phenomenon in the NHL. And things change when your child is involved.
Totally, totally, totally. Like nobody's, I'm not arguing with you at all on this. But the fact is, again, I come back to it shouldn't be up to the players to be nice guys.
But then I throw back, okay, but if the officials aren't quote unquote doing their jobs, do you do something? Again, it's that situation where this is an extreme situation. Someone else is doing their job, and then there's a player who's lying on the ice, bleeding out of his head.
I guess we have our answer, that one guy thought about doing something, and the other four guys went for a scoring chance. By the way, I remember, this reminds me of one of my favorite NBA highlights. is from the 80s, the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
There was a playoff game. Michael Smith played for the Celtics, and an opponent was down on the ground, and he went over to help him up. And I think it was Joe Klein who ran over and was like, "What are you doing? Like, it's a playoff game." And he blocked him from helping him up.
How much was the Matt Calvert situation a topic of discussion at the GM's meetings?
It was definitely a topic. The GM meetings are hilarious to me. Like, it reminds me a bit of like Clockwork Orange when
which scene?
Roddy McDowell goes in there all fired up and when he gets sent to the rehabilitation place.
Yeah.
And
he's
comes,
got toothpicks in his and eyes. He's got, and
he comes back.
Lovely,
and
lovely Ludwig van.
Totally placid. You know, guys come in there, they talk, okay, this is the changes I want, whether publicly or privately. And they all come out, and like John Chyka was one of the first GMs out the other day, and he does a scrum, and they're talking about the offside with Charlie Cole. And he's like, "Oh, most of the time the officials get this right, and there's only a few plays." I'm like, "Oh, Johnny got the toothpicks."
videos of Uber violence or ultra violence, however they referred to it in the movie or the book.
I always think about that because and he's not the only one. They all come out of there singing the same tune. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that they looked at that situation and they just said, "We're going to try to be more diligent about it." Nobody likes that visual. It's a bad, and we showed it on Saturday night, and Kelly said it's an easy fix. Like, just stop it. And I think it's an easier fix. Just use the logic you use with the helmet rule. Yeah. You know, one of the things the commissioner said in the past was, you don't want a situation where you wake up and you're seeing all this stuff on CNN, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are CNN moments. And again, you know, Matt Calvert, he's an honest player, and you don't want to see him get hurt and not get the right attention. I think that if you take the helmet theory and you prescribe it to everything, I think you can make that problem go away or lessen.
Speaking of GMs and the GMs meetings, we had a chance to sit down with Ron Francis on Tuesday. That podcast will come out on Monday, of course, the general manager of the Seattle fill-in-the-blanks.
You did a really nice panel with him.
That was good. I thought that, he's in a unique situation. And it has to be awful tempting and maybe a little bit intimidating as well when you're handed a blank sheet of paper.
I don't think much intimidates that guy.
I don't think so either. And he is cool about everything. And you remarked on it afterwards, after the interview. I mean, there's a real presence around Ron Francis.
Oh, yeah. Some people have
it. He walks into a room, Ron Francis has it. And
see, I'm the opposite of it, but Ron Francis, that guy's got it.
You mentioned a couple of things, and not to sort of give up the entire podcast, which comes out on Monday, but you wrote about a couple of things in 31 Thoughts from our conversation with him. What struck you most notably about Ron Francis, GM of the Seattle, I want to say Sasquatches, knowing full well it won't be Sasquatches?
I'm not going to say, because we like talked Krakens, about this stuff, and I'm not going to tip off what he said.
No, but you wrote about a couple of things already in 31 Thoughts.
No, but not the stuff about the Krakens and the Sasquatches, because
no, we go there.
I just took some newsy stuff. You know, I just thought it was interesting. He said they want an experienced head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you wonder, do you bring in a guy who's new with a new team? Gerard Gallant was obviously an experienced guy in Vegas. He liked what he saw there, so it's going to be an experienced head coach there. And the mock draft, like they're doing their first mock draft in January. It's going to be a year and a half before they do their team. And he did admit it's going to change a lot. But, you know, I love that stuff.
A couple of things we bounce around. We're going to be joined here by Scotty Upshaw in a couple of moments, who's playing in Switzerland right now. And as you'll find out in the interview, is still loving hockey. Like, there's no dimming that hockey bulb. It's still burning for Scotty Upshaw. Did you see Morgan Frost score his first goal?
I forgot to put that in my notes.
What a goal it was.
No, we should get Andy on.
Okay, now, for those that don't know, his father, Andy Frost, legendary.
The Voice,
was the in-house announcer for the Toronto Maple Leafs for a number of years. Legendary DJ on Q107. Psychedelic Sundays, one of his signature programs, was something I listened to every single Sunday. Loved it. Strange Paradise at the Phoenix. Yeah, you're burning. That's right, Emily. You know what's up. Strange Paradise at the Phoenix was a must-attend evening. And I worked with Andy for years, and I would, you know, we had a lot of conversation. And he did the Leaf Talk program on 640 after Leaf games for a lot of years. And he would always talk to me about young Morgan. Here's what young Morgan's doing now, and here's how he's going. Now, he's got such an interesting story, because Morgan Frost didn't play AAA hockey all the way up. He's from Aurora, so he would have been playing for YSE, and I think in his minor midget year was cut from the team, so played his AAA with the Barrie Junior Colts. So he gets drafted by the Sioux Greyhounds.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right after Sioux had their, you know, they loaded up the squad, ended up losing to the Erie Otters in the conference final, and so there was a lot of attrition on the team. Mm-hmm. One of the surprises was that Vancouver kept Jared McCann. So that opened up a spot, and that's where 16-year-old Morgan Frost found himself in a third-line center spot with the Sioux Greyhounds. Like, his stories are really good. And even going into that draft, there was some thought, okay, Morgan Frost is going to make it in the first. Minnesota really wanted him. Philadelphia ended up taking him. And he had, you know, I'm ripping up the OHL, World Junior, all of, he's one of those players that you look at and you say, this guy's a hockey lifer, a gamer, loves everything about the game. Is it going to work at the NHL level? And I'm telling you, man, watching that goal and how easily he scored it.
Still able to poke it down low. Out in front, Frosty scores! Morgan Frost, in his NHL debut, has his first goal in the bigs. And it's a beauty. And the Flyers back within two. It's 4-2.
What a move. The patience and the calmness for a guy in his first NHL game. Team down by three. And watch this set of hands on Frost. I mean, that's just amazing. What a shot.
That guy's going to be in Philadelphia for a long, long time.
Well, they're giving chances to all their young players, right? And they're shuffling them up, down. Guys are getting an opportunity. I'm just really happy for Andy. I mean, really decent guy.
Great guy.
I can't add anything more about Morgan Frost than what you just did. You just gave his entire oral history. But I'm just really happy for Andy and the family. I mean, as a parent, you live to see your children reach their dreams, and Andy sure saw it.
You know what's an underrated program when it comes to junior hockey? The Sioux program. So we talk a lot about, the London Knights and the Windsor Spitfires, and we talked last year about, you know, the next wave of young executives and general managers that are on the horizon for the National Hockey League.
Yep.
Kyle Raftus is an interesting name. Like, what he's been able to put together in 6 years in Sioux, 16 players have played in the NHL since he's been there. This year, you know, Barrett Hayton, Rasmus Sandin,
mm-hmm.
Connor Timmins, and now Morgan Frost. More on the horizon. And Sioux's never had a really high first-round pick in the OHL draft. And I believe in the entire time that Raftus has been there, they've never had a second round pick.
Do you think they will never get the respect they deserve until they win?
The Sioux Greyhounds?
Yeah.
Probably, because that's the one thing the London and Windsor have done. And, you
and
know,
I'm
that
not talking about the Ralph Intranuvo Greyhounds.
First of all, it's speedy Ralph Intranuvo whenever you say Ralph Intranuvo, because in his time was one of the fastest players.
Good player.
And they're always good. Like, Sioux's always good. Like, it's a real good program, but you're right. Like, until you win,
the respect doesn't come.
You win.
The full respect doesn't come until you win.
Absolutely. Let's hit a break. Come back with Scotty Upshaw on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Okay, Elliot, this will be a real treat. Please be joined now by one of the more charismatic and well-liked players anywhere in the hockey world, Scotty Upshaw. And Scotty, I say that because everybody that I talk to has a Scotty Upshaw story, or at least knows you. Do you know everyone in hockey, Scotty? It seems that way.
The name has traveled a long ways. I got here to Switzerland this past couple weeks, and I've had guys, you know, laughing about stories they've heard, and, you know, so it's a big honor. It's a big honor to be, you know, to be looked up like that from younger guys. And, you know, I've had fun playing hockey, so it's, I cherish that.
What percentage of these stories are actually true?
I got to be honest. I don't know where they hear them from, but most are, Elliot. I got to say, it's you know, the game of hockey, you create a lot of relationships and a lot of stories along the way, and it's part of the game. And you know, I feel proud to say I've had a long, illustrious career, and it's still going.
So here's my question, and you have to understand this isn't spitting chiclets, so I can get fired for your answer. What is one story that someone said to you, I've heard, that you said, I cannot believe that you know that?
So I got a line mate. His name is Dominic Svergi. I call him Svergi. He's one of the most talented young kids. He played in Spokane. And he was bringing up stories of, like, the Portland Roadshow and stuff going on in the WHL back in the day. And I just had to look at him and kind of nod my head and say, you know, all these old stories you've heard of the days back on the bus, they're all true. Like, it's a league-wide thing. And something that, you know, if you played in the WHL, you understand, because you spent a lot of time on the bus with your teammates. And if you don't understand it, I don't think you'll ever get it. So...
You're playing in Switzerland now. I want to ask you about some other international games, and I want to ask about the 2009 World Championships. Okay, ultimately Canada loses 2-1 to Russia in the final. This one's in Switzerland. True or false, you guys found a bar, a Canadian hockey bar called Fucking A. True or false?
That is absolutely true, Jeff. It was in Interlaken, Switzerland, which is a beautiful place up in the mountains. And our team Canada stayed there for about 10 days at this really nice hotel. And sure enough, you know, we get up for practice one day and all of our family members come, like, you know, streaming through breakfast going, you won't believe this bar we all found. And sure enough, my brother's leading the charge, my brother Brent. He's like, oh yeah, I was behind the bar the whole night serving drinks to Messier and Iserman. It was all good. The bar's called Fucking A. It's spelt out like it would, just like it sounds. So good Canadian bar in Switzerland that we all had fun at for the whole week.
So I'm curious, and that's a great story. I'm curious about the nature of a relationship between a player and a coach, not in the NHL, but at the World Championships. So I know you had Lindy Ruff as your head coach in those World Championships.
We had Lindy Ruff.
I was told by one of your teammates... You guys all called them Ruffles because the relationship is a little more casual than it is in the NHL.
It's totally casual. I'll tell another story about one of your guys is one of your anchormen over there at Sportsnet. But we're all sitting in our room. You know, we have a room set up with a TV to catch playoff games back home and watch movies or whatever. We're all sitting there. And Colby Armstrong, one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet, as we all know in the hockey world, he sits up and he got the YouTube going on his computer and he fires up a clip of Cam Neely absolutely dropping Lindy Ruff in a game. I'm talking like one punching him. And we're all dying laughing and Lindy's kind of red-faced a little bit, like a little bit embarrassed, and he's kind of doesn't know how to approach the situation. And Army, next thing he does, he puts on a video of him getting one punched by a Russian, I can't remember who it was, but he absolutely gets drilled and laughs, makes fun of himself, and our whole team just hits the deck laughing. But it was one of the things you couldn't really do in the NHL. You wouldn't really do that to your coach. But in the World Championships, when everything's pretty laid back and, you know, you're all having fun, it was the perfect, perfect joke. It was great.
I think I just realized who Jeff's source for all these stories is, too. Like,
yeah, right there.
Now, let me ask you, at the World Championship, Scotty, do players drink with the coaches? Like, would you go and Lindy Ruff go for beers or anything like that?
Yeah, you definitely did. It wasn't so much going out and having beers, but you enjoyed them after a win in the room. You'd have a beer. It's a totally laid-back you know, atmosphere, especially throughout the round robin. You know, Team Canada, obviously, we put a really good lineup in every tournament and all-star lineup. And, you know, when you win games, you sit back, you have a couple cold Molson Canadians, you cheers, and, you know, you kind of gear up for the quarterfinals, semis, and finals. So you enjoy the whole experience the whole way. It's kind of what it's all about.
You've had great experiences, Scotty, as we all know, in hockey. And it continues. And this is one of the things I like. Like, this story is continuing for you. There's an old saying, use hockey, don't let hockey use you. Are you using hockey? Because it seems like you are. And good for you for doing it, if so.
It's a damn good old saying. I never heard that one before. But the game of hockey has been so great for me and for, you know, for everyone I've, you know, everyone I'm around consistently. As the years have gone on, I've almost had more fun with it than I ever have. I've had great teammates my whole career, but I guess I really looked forward to being like, you know, the guy in the room that, you know, more of a leader, more of a guy that people look up to, that you can share experiences with, and you cherish those as time goes on. It's, you know, the game doesn't, you know, it's not there forever for you as a player, but if you can extend it into the years like you can into your 30s and, you know, some guys 45, Jágr, then you enjoy the moments much more. And I'm at that point right now. I'm like I said, I'm having so much fun playing hockey again, being healthy and being on a team and, you know, jumping on the road. It's all part of the experience, and I love it.
If an NHL team calls you, says, Scotty, we want you here on a PTO, whether it's the rest of this year or this summer, what's your answer?
I ain't done. That's my answer. So I'm trying to play the best hockey I can. My body feels as good as it ever has. So I'm over here trying to help my team, Omri Piotta in the Swiss National League, you know, do some good things and, you know, go represent my country at the Spengler Cup. After that, I'm a free agent and I would go absolutely anywhere on a PTO. I tell you that.
You and Chris Versteeg, who I understand could be at the Spengler Cup too, if you two stared at each other and insulted each other in a dressing room, who would run out of insults first?
Steger and I, we have a great relationship. Actually, we spoke a few days ago, but he and I could throw it back and forth. He knows how to chuck him too. So I don't know if it ever leads to having to chuck him, but he's you know, he's definitely a guy you want to go for beers with and a guy you'd love to have on your team. I know a lot of guys hated playing against him, but boy, if you got to play with him, it was something special.
You've played internationally against a lot of different countries. I've always maintained that maybe the best fans internationally are Latvians. They go insane for their win, lose, doesn't matter. They're singing, they're drinking, they're having a good time. It's fantastic. Where would you put Hungarians on that list, Scotty?
The Hungarians. Jeez, boys, I've never played in front of a Hungarian.
Yes, you have.
Okay, I have. We did play them in the World Championship. So, but it wasn't in Hungary. I can only imagine if they were that crazy in Switzerland, they must be that even crazier in Hungary. Now, I'm just going to say this, and not because I'm biased and I'm on the team, but our fan base in Switzerland for Omri Piotta, you got to YouTube it. But we're playing in a derby game Friday against our rival Lugano, and these fans go absolutely bonkers. I'm talking fires in the crowd. They have flags, they have drums and do chants. I've seen YouTube videos. I haven't experienced it firsthand yet, but I will. It's nuts. So if you get a chance, check out a YouTube video of our fans, and you know, I think they'll put Hungary to bed.
Just, I don't really have a final question, but I wanted to say it's just unusual for me to hear you on a podcast without you being asked how many kills you've had this week. You don't have to answer that.
Never enough. You guys are great.
Last one then. We'll try to class it up a little bit here. What does fourth line for life mean to Scotty Upshaw?
It means the start of Mr. Biz Nasty 2.0 is what that is right there. He created that a long time ago, and somehow I got shoved into it being a fourth liner for the last 6-7 years of my career. So I can't say I was always a fourth liner like Biz was, but I guess he was a D-man at one point.
Awesome.
Well, Scotty, thanks for being here. And, you know, I love watching you play because I know if the longer you play, the less of a chance you come take my job, because Jeff and I both know that day is coming.
They can slide an extra chair in there somewhere, I'm sure. Can't they, Elliot?
I hope so. I hope it's an extra chair instead of one of the current ones.
That's good stuff, boys. Anytime. I love catching up with you guys. Always read your thoughts, Elliot. So you guys are great. Appreciate it.
Have a good day. Thanks, Scotty.
You too.
All right, a smoky break for our ThoughtLine partner, Montana's Barbecue and Bar. With meats prepared and smoked in-house, it's no wonder why they're Canada's home for barbecue.
check them out. And as Elliot always says,
try the ribs.
Yes, their ribs are smoked in-house every day until they fall off the bone. And don't forget, Montana's has all-you-can-eat ribs every Wednesday.
Head on down to Montana's Barbecue and Bar and take the all-you-can-eat rib challenge every Wednesday. Smoking good barbecue only at Montana's. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
So that's Scotty Upshaw. Wonderful conversation. Could have gone on forever. You can see more of Scotty Upshaw in Rogers Hometown Hockey this weekend in Fort McMurray. That is the 23rd and 24th. Rogers Hometown Hockey on Sunday. The signature game is the Oilers and the Coyotes. Chris Phillips will be at the broadcast. Colton Parayko feature as well. Very much looking forward to that. Colton Parayko, by the way, debuted on the same night as Connor McDavid in the same game.
You've used that before, have you?
Yeah, not? Well, we had St. Louis and Edmonton a couple weeks ago, and I used it.
I was like, this is not the first time I've heard this fact.
Honestly, I was just checking to see if you paid attention to my open from that night. That's why I threw it. Because if you went, oh, really? That's interesting. Elliot, I used it like 5 minutes ago on an open for Wednesday
night.
I hang
on every word of your nine-minute opens. Now, let me just say, too, about Colton Parayko, a couple of things about the people we just talked about here. First of all, life is meant to be lived the way that Scotty Upshaw is living it. He makes no apologies. He enjoys his existence.
Yep.
I think sometimes I've met a lot of players. Like Scott Niedermeyer is a guy who admitted this early in his career. And I don't think Scotty Upshaw never enjoyed hockey, but Scotty Niedermeyer admitted that he was not a guy who enjoyed hockey early in his career. But as he got older and he played with his brother, you saw how much that really changed. And here's Scotty Upshaw, who's just wants to play. He's battling to make the NHL. He's done, what, 3 PTOs in the last 3 years. He jokes that he holds the PTO record, but he still wants to play. You know, he goes overseas. He's in Switzerland, obviously. He laughs at everything. And Jeff, make no mistake about it, if he wants a career in TV, he is going to have a career in TV.
There are just some guys you look at right away and say, the chair is waiting for you.
Yes, and he's definitely one of them. I think the way he lives his life is the way that people should live their lives. The other thing I'd want to say is the Paraykos, and you mentioned Colton Parayko. I got to tell you, I can't tell you how many people who've told me in the past, like, what a family that is. Like, just really nice people.
Mm-hmm.
Colton is a pretty nice guy to deal with. I don't know the rest of his family really well, but they just say that those are great people, the Paraykos.
It's always refreshing when some of your favorite players, and I'm a big Colton Parayko fan, are also the best people. So that's refreshing to hear.
Now, can I say, while you're doing that?
Yes.
I once had one of the first speeches I ever did, like talks to kids I ever did, was like 1995. Okay, so they were like 7, 8, 9-year-olds.
So this is like a 25-year-old Elliot Friedman?
Yeah, 25-year-old Elliot Friedman talking to like some 7, 8, 9-year-olds, and they're like, who's the biggest jerk you've ever met in sports? And I'm like, I'm not answering that. I'm not telling you that. Like, please, please, please. And you know how young kids wear you down?
Yeah,
like
your own kids. Yes.
And so I said, fine, here's the name. And 3 of the kids started crying because it was someone they all loved. So I never answered.
Could you not have picked like an obscure, like that is an obvious one.
It was,
you don't pick like the local hero.
It was a mistake of inexperience.
Elliot.
So I never answered that question again. And if you guys want to know what it is, too bad. I'm not saying who it was.
Who does it rhyme with?
It rhymes with Schmeff Merrick.
Basketball, hockey, baseball.
No, not giving any clues.
Was it a Blue Jay? I'm
not
guessing it was a Blue Jay.
Any clues.
It's a baseball player though, right?
No clues.
Like they're jerks, like the ball players.
I will say this about baseball players. It changed for the better after 94.
Okay, some hashtag Ask31s. From Matt Crawley, do you believe that Chris Kreider will be moved before the trade deadline, or will the Rangers attempt to re-sign him?
I think it's more likely than not he gets moved. And there will be interest. I mean, that guy would be a heck of a playoff player for anybody.
From Jeff Welsh, hashtag Ask31, where's the realistic landing spot for Taylor Hall? Edmonton or Colorado?
Are we
at that now where it's like, it's not if he's going, it's where he's going?
Most likely.
Okay.
Nobody's saying 100%, but I think we all believe that he will get moved. Everybody believes that Colorado's in on it. And why not? He'd be dynamite there. But there's got to be teams that we haven't considered yet. Jeff, Mark Bergevin, would you not want to try that if you were Montreal?
I almost said 100%, but then I realized we're getting scolded by social media. Yes, I'd also say the same about Columbus.
would you make that move if you were Columbus now? Do you really think you're good enough with Taylor Hall to win the cup? I don't know if I would do. I mean, Yarmo, as we've joked, he's got Yarmo the big brass ones, but
not shy about.
I don't see that as being the right move. I don't think this is their year. I'll give you another team. I think it's only a matter of time until David Poile has had enough.
Another huge move from David Poile.
Well, it's a rental, right? Like they're not going to be able to sign him, I don't think. But would it surprise you if
nothing he was Poile in on was, that? Nothing would surprise me from Poile. Nothing surprised me, but we just saw Kyle Turris healthy scratched on Tuesday night.
So I think there's going to be teams here that we haven't even thought of.
From Mahesh, it seems like every major league takes advantage of a major holiday to showcase their sports. NFL with Thanksgiving, NBA with Christmas. Why doesn't the NHL go all in on New Year's Day with a 5-game all-day showcase with prime matchups, then with the Winter Classic in prime time?
I think they just believe that that day should be for the Winter Classic.
All attention on that?
Yes. But, you know, the one thing I agree, Mahesh, is that I would love to see a day where the NHL does 24 hours of hockey.
So a game that starts at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Why not?
Oh, I would love it.
I would love to see
attention
one
Players
day.
Association.
If you can do, like, with everything we know now about sleep and rest, I think you could do the schedule. Look, teams go to Prague, they get 5 days off, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it would work?
What does work mean? Like a lot of people watching it?
Yeah.
At that time of morning? I don't know.
Okay. We're taking this. Maybe you do 18 hours. I like 24. I'm not backing off this idea in theory. Screw this. You're not talking me out of this. Do you think, like just say for example.
I'm the wrong person to ask because I am. I will watch it. I will watch anything at any time. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Well, maybe. Like if you started a game at 3 a.m. between, let's just say for argument's sake, the Toronto Maple Leafs and anybody. Do you think you'd sell out the arena?
I watched the China games. My honest answer is I don't know. I think so, but I don't know.
I like Mahesh's idea in the sense that they need to do something special on a holiday. They have the Outdoor Classic on New Year's Day. They're not taking away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, does everybody have Family Day? I don't even know. Like that's a Canadian holiday for you, yeah. U.S. listeners. I don't know if you have anything like. There's got to be something where you can try something like that.
Okay, this one from Dale Hunter's Helmet. Was a prolific tweeter. George McPhee's fight reel is a sight to behold.
I have this on VHS.
What?
George McPhee's fight reel.
Which one's your favorite McPhee fight, by the way?
Like, I haven't watched it in a long time.
McPhee talk it.
Now against Ruotsalainen. Battle in center. Fight going on. McPhee and Tockett as Van Beesbrouck makes a save. McPhee and Tockett are going.
They ran after each other, boy. They just went right at each other.
McPhee again has got only one hand. That right hand has got a little protected. Well, he's going with the right.
He's throwing it anyway.
It's a hurt right hand. He's just trying to go around to the left side as they switch.
Tockett's a good fighter, too.
Wow, McPhee's holding his own. This is a battle royal here.
Holy Max.
This is a main event.
Look how tired they are. What a battle that is.
Tockett wants to go for some more. Oh, he got cut.
Yeah, I know he got cut. He got a good one. George McPhee went after him. Look at Glenn Hanlon.
You can see that Glenn Hanlon's in the game.
Well, let's see if that picks up the Rangers any.
Yes, that would probably be.
Yeah, with Glenn Hanlon going berserk on the bench as George.
George McPhee's a tough guy.
Oh, yes. Okay, besides the obvious, Tockett, Berube, etc., which NHL executive or coach has a great fight reel?
Travis Green's probably would be not too bad.
He was always game.
Ron Hextall is not yet a GM. I assume he will be a GM again.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember. Jim Nill. Jim Nill was a tough guy.
Paul Holmgren?
Well, Paul Holmgren, man. Nobody wanted to fight that guy.
Nope.
Rod Brind'Amour?
You know the one that I, would, you know that I would go with?
Who?
Rick Dudley.
Oh, yeah. But he has the best bench reactions, too.
He does, too. But Rick Dudley, ask anyone when he played, whether it was WHA Cincinnati or NHL, there are just some guys that you stayed away from. Like if Kurt Fraser wasn't coaching overseas in the KHL, yeah. I'd say Kurt Fraser.
He was a tough
guy. Some guys are just sneaky tough. You know who was like that? Brian McClellan. Brian McClellan was like that
Gary
too.
Gary Galley, who was a freshman when McClellan was a senior at Bowling Green, said that McClellan was a really, really tough guy. Can I tell you a quick George McPhee story?
Sure, of course.
So George McPhee, game five of the 2018 Stanley Cup final, which was the night that the Capitals clinched. The game's in Vegas. We have the long pregame show. We ask McPhee to come on at the beginning of the show. And, you know, he's not thrilled about it, but he does it. There's one thing about McGeorge I will always say. He believes he's got to make himself available, though he didn't want to come on a night where they could lose the cup. So he comes on. He's on at the beginning of the show. And we know that the Golden Knights are going to make a change, but we don't know what it is. We think we know, but we don't know.
Yeah.
So the show opens with Ron hosting, and we do a slow pan of the sticks on the bench. And Ron's saying, okay, we see the sticks are here. This player's sticks are in. This player's sticks are out. That's how we think the change is. And at the commercial break, when George McPhee is finished after his interview, he says, the sticks, hey, that's how you guys figure it out. And he was not pleased. I was like, whoa.
The sticks, huh? That's how you he was,
and he, and you know him, like he's got that really intense look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was an interesting few minutes.
Pound for pound.
Oh.
One of the
tough guy.
Toughest players. One more. It's a frivolous one. You know I love stuff like this, so I'll throw it out there. From Chris Kraft, favorite color tux of all time. Always liked the Gretzky blue, personally. The Gretzky blue tux.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, essentially, I'm just asking you, what blade holder color would be your favorite? I think we've only seen blue.
I'm trying to think.
Has there been any other ones?
Have there been any other colors?
Gretzky's blue are the only ones.
But the rest of them are all white or black or...
Yeah, white or black.
Yeah. I mean, I can't...
Now, there's like a lot of the blades. Now, like some of the step steel has black, but as far as tux, we've only seen blue.
Like, I'm not an equipment geek like Merrick is. I wouldn't be able to answer that.
Just say blue and be done with
blue.
It.
Blue.
Now, if you make the color of the ice blue, the white would really pop on the tuck. See if
oh
you're going to come out.
Okay. So embarrassing.
We will, on that, leave by thanking Scotty Upshaw for joining us today. And as always, thanking our producer, Emil Dulich, for making the show sound listenable. Don't forget, Monday, the Ron Francis podcast will come out. Check Apple Podcasts for that one. We will leave you now with a four-piece band from Toronto. They released their debut EP, Taste of Life, earlier this year, and it's good. With As They Do, here's Fadeaways on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.